From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cass. We're on the record. The number of jobs in newsrooms has dropped by one-fourth in the last decade. Local reporters are trying to cover the stories that matter with fewer resources. Lucy Doglish, Dean of the College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, tells about recruiting diverse students and preparing them for new challenges. And Lisa Snowden-McCray, editor of Baltimore Beat, points to the mismatch between those who live in the city and those who cover it.
Baltimore's population is over 60% Black. And Baltimore's population of journalists is not by a long shot. And that's a problem. That means that there are stories that aren't getting covered that we don't even know are not getting covered.
The future of local journalism, on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The number of headlines at your fingertips at any moment is astounding. It seems like there is more news than ever, and yet, if you zero in on your neighborhood, you might not be able to find stories about zoning decisions or school board meetings, city council proposals, or candidates running for local office. And without that reporting, you won't know what you don't know. According to the Pew Research Center, newsroom employment across the U.S. has dropped by 25% in the last decade. A study by the University of North Carolina found that about 20% of all metro and community newspapers in the country have gone out of business or merged since 2004, resulting in the rise of what they call news deserts. What's driving the erosion of the Fourth Estate? What does this mean for those who consume the news and those who report it? Lucy Doglish is dean of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland in College Park. Before that, from 2000 to 2012, she was executive director of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. She's a former reporter and editor of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Dean Doglish, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila.
And with me in the studio is Lisa Snowden-McCray, editor-in-chief of the local alt-weekly Baltimore Beat. She's a longtime journalist who's written for the Afro-American newspaper, the Columbia Journalism Review, the Baltimore Sun, and other outlets. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me.
So here in Baltimore, there have been layoffs, buyouts, mergers. Watching all this happen, what has been your reaction, Lisa?
Well, I've been a victim of some of that. I worked at Baltimore City Paper back in 2006. We were doing work on a very skeletal crew, maybe like five or six staffers, and we were told that we were being closed. I was able to go to the Sun proper and be on their editorial board, but I still know people that was their last full-time staff position. I've seen it very intimately, what it looks like to feel journalism shrink abruptly.
Lucy, what do you tell students in the journalism school about their job prospects?
Well, I tell them that there are going to be jobs out there. They're just not going to look like the jobs that I got when I was straight out of journalism school many, many years ago. We find that our placement rates are very high, in the range of 92 to 93% within 6 months of graduating from Merrill College. But these students are oftentimes working for news organizations that didn't even exist 5 years ago, or they're doing something a little bit different. But there's no question there's been a decline in coverage of neighborhoods and communities across the country, and that's a big problem.
I want to get into that problem, but I also want to make sure, when you say they're doing something a little bit different, are they doing journalism?
Oh, of course. They're working for news outlets that are more web-based. They are doing things like search engine optimization, data journalism reporting. We're also making sure that anybody who graduates from Merrill College has very solid visual skills. You'll be able to shoot and edit video. You'll be able to create websites. Everybody needs to be a jack of all trades.
Lisa, you told us a bit of your work history. Let me pick it up. The Baltimore Beat was founded in 2017 after City Paper was shuttered. 4 months later, its publisher shut the Beat down, citing lack of advertising revenue. Mm-hmm. The Beat relaunched earlier this year. How did you bring the Beat back?
Pure stubbornness. When we got the news that we were going to have to shut down, we cried. And then we decided that at that moment that we were still so needed. And we were telling stories that people weren't able to get anywhere else. So we just said, how are we going to figure this out? And it required learning a lot very fast. We had to learn what nonprofit journalism was. We had to learn what running a business was. We had to learn what making a budget is. These are things that, you know, you don't learn in journalism school because you're taught, they don't tell you how to run and start your own news operation. So we had lots of conversations with people all over the country that are willing to help out. We had meetings with people here in Baltimore. Right now, we are only funded through Patreon, which is a website where people can make small dollar donations, $5, $10. We have about maybe 600 or so subscribers, and that's we make do with that money. While we get that money, I'm still having conversations with funders. I'm learning how to write grants, so I'm very busy.
That's Lisa Snowden-McRae here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She's editor-in-chief of the nonprofit digital publication Baltimore Beat. And also with us is Lucy Dalglish, dean of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland. We're talking about hurdles faced by local media. And Lucy, let me pick up on Lisa's point. What do you teach students about forming their own publications? Going off on their own, is that a skill that a graduating journalist needs to have?
Absolutely. We have a mandatory class that all of our seniors have to take on basically the business of journalism. We also have an elective where they are taught how to set up their own business. We're teaching more entrepreneurial skills than ever before. Likewise, Merrill College is one of two journalism schools in the country that recently got a $3 million grant from the Scripps Howard Foundation to start an investigative reporting center. It's Merrill College and Arizona State. We're now going to be expanding our Capital News Service, which is a nonprofit that's been around for 25 years. Our students cover state and regional news and provide it to local media all throughout the Delmarva region, and we're going to be building on already our expertise on doing investigative reports with this grant from Scripps Howard.
Lisa, to you, does it look as if nonprofits are the future of local journalism?
That's a big question. I know that it's an outlet. It's an outlet that was not available to me when I was a student graduating. I think that there's so many communities that are so different that I think that it's more viable, but I couldn't say that it's like the answer. I think that there's going to be a whole lot of answers. We already have some other great news outlets here in Baltimore that are not nonprofits. The Brew is, I think they're an LLC. So a lot of what we're doing right now is kind of experimenting and seeing kind of what happens.
Dean Dalglish, are people less interested in the news today? And especially, are they less interested in local news?
No, I don't think so. I live in a neighborhood that still has a neighborhood paper newspaper, and people read it religiously. I think if you go across the country, you're going to find small and medium-sized cities that folks are still reading the newspaper, going online to read local news. I think in this particular region of the country, we are so overloaded with stories of national importance that it's kind of a paradox. Sometimes we let the local and the micro-local go in favor of getting an angle on some big national story, and I don't know what the answer is. But the bigger the city, even though there's a lot more news, sometimes the harder it is to cover it.
But if people are ignoring it, what is the problem?
People don't know what they don't know. We know from some of our investigations, and certainly what major metro papers are realizing, is that if they print an investigation that points out fraud or corruption, people want to know about it, and they will react to it. What they're not reading as much as they used to are the local real estate things, the local stories about what the schools are doing. In a way, it almost makes sense, because 30 years ago, school districts didn't have their own web page. The county didn't have a web page. People who are used to being covered are now pushing out their version of reality. And I think we have some work still to be done on persuading them that just because a government entity tells you something doesn't mean it's true, and that there is value in having journalists independently cover stories.
I also wonder if the fact that our newsrooms have shrunk hurts a lot, because things that you need to be immersed in to understand, you know, the intricacies of this, what this stuff means. A lot of newspapers do not have the resources to have those kind of dedicated, passionate beat reporters anymore.
And so you think readers pick up on that.
Right.
This isn't as valuable to them.
Right.
They get that. You know, here in public radio, we spend time making an outright on-air plea for money. Mm-hmm. We ask people to pledge. And of course, in doing that, we tell people why they should, why we think they should. How can journalists convince people of the value of their work when there are so many free options? Lisa?
One of the things that I always say is that we journalists are very good at explaining to the world to people, but we're terrible at explaining what we do. So people don't know. Like, I feel like there's a connection that's lost because we are so overworked. We are trying to get so much, but we don't have conversations with people anymore. Because when we do, I think that's the thing that helps them make that connection and understand our value. When we get in front of people's faces, I think that's when they understand the work that we do and the value, and then the things that we might struggle with, as opposed to, you know, I think the internet makes it so easy to kind of complain and shake your finger at these faceless people, but we're all people that are passionate and working. We would not be in this job if we did not love it. And that's all the journalists here in Baltimore, not just the ones at the beat.
Lisa's absolutely right about when she says that we're terrible at telling people why we're important. We're so used to trying to set a distance from our sources and from a story that, and we make assumptions that people automatically understand why journalism is important. But at its core, what the First Amendment protects is the right of people to receive truthful information, hopefully from journalists independently gathered, and they take that information when they go to the ballot box to decide who's going to lead us and how we're going to live together as a community. And we need to be able to teach our students, and I hope we do this, is that democracy is really, really in trouble if we don't start valuing journalists more.
On that note, we need to take a quick break here on The Record. I'm Sheila Cass. My guests are Lucy Dauglish of the University of Maryland School of Journalism and Lisa Snowden-McCray of Baltimore Beat. When we're back, newsrooms across the country are mostly white and mostly male. What do we lose when reporters don't reflect the diversity of the communities they cover? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. From layoffs to buyouts to accusations of fake news, local media outlets face steep obstacles as they work to provide thorough coverage of their communities. Meanwhile, little progress has been made to increase the diversity of people in newsrooms. As news staff shrink, they remain mostly white and male. My guests this morning are Lucy Dauglish, Dean of the Philip Merrill School of Journalism at the University of Maryland, and Lisa Snowden-McRae, Editor-in-Chief of the nonprofit digital publication Baltimore Beat. The cover article in the Columbia Journalism Review's race issue, published last fall, was titled "Decades of Failure." It noted that while racial and ethnic minorities comprise about 40% of the U.S. population, they account for less than a quarter of newsroom staff at print and online publications and a mere 12% in radio outlets. Lisa, you wrote for CJR about the landscape in Baltimore. What did you find?
That Baltimore's population is over 60% Black, and Baltimore's population of journalists is not, like, not by a long shot. And that's a problem. That means that there are stories that aren't getting covered that we don't even know are not getting covered. One of the things that I haven't even really focused on, that I've been trying to focus on more now, is, like, I talk a lot about the Black journalists because that's, you know, I'm Black. But even, like, the Latinx journalists, like, there's a bustling Latinx community here in Baltimore. And we don't hear those stories very often, even less so than we hear African-American stories. And so, like, you just think about all the ways that we, you know, we're talking about what Baltimore is because Donald Trump has decided that he wants to talk about Baltimore. And there's so much about the city that's complex, and we're just not getting it.
Lucy, how does the journalism school work to attract diverse students?
Well, it's something we try to work on intensely. A lot of it has to do with money. We've had some success, particularly in our master's program this coming year. More than 50% of my incoming master's class is going to be African American, and I consider that to be a remarkable achievement. And we worked very, very hard over the last year to attract undergraduates from the historically Black colleges and universities. On the undergraduate side, it's still a little difficult, but what we have to do to get those students, a lot of it has to do with getting enough financial aid to get those students successfully through 4 years of college or through a master's program.
I want to pick up on your point about journalism students who may be financially strapped.
Yeah.
A Pew Research Center analysis of census data found that newsroom employees are often more than twice as likely as other workers to be college graduates, but journalists make less money than other college-educated workers, averaging about $8,000 less at $51,000 a year. Lisa, you wrote another piece for CJR about journalists in Maryland mm-hmm. who are struggling to make ends meet. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that came from the efforts of the members of the Chesapeake News Guild. The Chesapeake News Guild is made up of writers who work for a lot of the smaller Sun papers or smaller Tribune-owned papers, so the Annapolis Capital, the Carroll County Times, and they will periodically kind of do these drives on Twitter where they're very frank and open about the amount of money that they make, which is not very much at all. One gentleman I spoke to is in his late 30s, has a wife and a child, and doesn't even make $40,000 a year. And not only does he not make that amount, but he's forced to go to a food bank that he's written about to feed his family. I think the expectation, at least my expectation when I graduated as a journalist, was that, no, I'm not going to make much money fresh out of college. But then as I'm there for a while, the amount that I can be paid will grow, and I don't think that that's happening anymore.
Dean Dauglish, what will it take to ensure that journalism pays a living wage?
Boy, I wish I could tell you that I have the answers. Probably the union activity is going to help a little bit, but until the business model for journalism at least stabilizes, I think we're going to see this happening. One thing I can tell you is that as bad as it is on the newspaper and internet website side, it's far worse in television. and young people are going to small stations all around the country, the small market stations, and they're making next to nothing. And I think television is still actually making money.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Lucy Dalglish, Dean of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, and Lisa Snowden-McRae, Editor-in-Chief of the nonprofit digital publication Baltimore Beat. We're talking about challenges facing the resource-strapped local media. Let me just briefly turn to the role of social media. We could talk about social media for an hour, I'm sure. It was heralded as a way to share stories and grow audiences. It's become a place for misinformation to spread rapidly. Is social media doing more harm than good? Lisa?
That's a loaded question.
No kidding.
It can be amazing. I had a period in my career where I was not working a lot. I was home with two small babies. And while I was home with two babies, social media was my window to adults and other writers who were working and people who were freelancing the way that I was. The thing that's not so great is seeing the abuse that can be, you know, lobbed at journalists from, you know, the White House on, the misinformation. I have a lot of older family members who don't know, even younger family members, that this random website that they found on Facebook is not a respectable news organization.
So, Dean Dalglish, do you consider social media a plus for your students?
Yes. They wouldn't be able to do what they're doing unless they had mastered the use of social media. A lot of social media is cringeworthy. We teach 400 students a year from across the campus every year on news literacy and just try to teach non-journalism students what is quality information on the web and what is not. We teach seminars on search. So in other words, students who are not journalists also learn how to find quality information on the web. It's the great connector.
Well, let me specifically ask you about the Twitter storm, the flurry of tweets that President Trump fired off over the weekend, calling Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings racist and his district a disgusting rat and rodent infested mess. The president can fire off inflammatory tweets every day and often does. How should local newsrooms weigh the decision about whether to cover each of these firestorms, Lisa?
I'm literally wrestling with that right now because I and my partner, Brandon Soderberg, my partner in the paper, were like, well, we have to say something, but what? Because you don't want to add to the noise. And for me, I know that the people who are most important are the ones that are still not going to be heard. You know, a lot of people from Baltimore got microphones this weekend as a result of those tweets. And they were all the people at the very top. They weren't the people that needed to be heard the most. So it's painful for me because of the work that I do, I know what Baltimore's problems are. But I also get to know so many amazing people who are doing work and just making this city the magical place that it is. And I don't want their work to be ignored or derailed because of the whim of someone who's, you know, mad about this thing for the day.
Lucy, do you have advice to your students about how to cover or not cover this kind of Twitter activity by the president?
Well, you know, you teach ethics seminars. You try to have conversations about all of this. You try to give them the opportunity to learn how to make tough decisions. But when the President of the United States tweets something like he did over the weekend, you can't ignore it.
And we'll be having conversations about the way, like, we've never had a president like this.
Heaven
and there's nothing in any journalism book that can prepare. I don't think that can be prepared. I think that we'll be weighing out how Trump's election was covered, how his campaign was covered. We're going to be talking about that for decades to come because we're all still actively wrestling with how to cover this.
Yeah, it's horrible, you know, trying to figure out how to teach students. You know, if you know something is false, in a story, in a tweet? Do you say it's false? Do you say it's a lie? Do you put it in the lead? Do you put it in the headline? These are debates we have virtually every day.
And I look forward to continuing the conversation with you both. Thank you for this conversation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Lucy Daglish is Dean of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland. Lisa Snowden-McRae is Editor-in-Chief of the nonprofit digital publication Baltimore Beat. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we've got links to the reporting we discussed today. And you can hear more from Lisa Snowden-McRae later this month. She'll be giving a talk on justice with Creative Mornings Baltimore on August 23rd. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. And a quick correction before we go. Yesterday, I told you the wrong day for the discussion at the Impact Hub about Lawrence Lanahan's new book, The Lines Between Us. It's tomorrow, 6 p.m. at 10 East North Avenue.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.